It's time for Pet Files Ask the Vet, underwritten by the Millerton Veterinary Practice, traditional small animal medicine and surgery, chiropractic, laser therapy, acupuncture, and Chinese herbal medicine, 518-789-3440, millertonvet.com. With us today, Dr. Carolyn Cannon, owner and chief vet at the Millerton Veterinary Practice.
Good morning.
Hello, Dr. Cannon. I'm not done yet. Hello, Dr. Cannon.
You're not done yet? I'm sorry, you paused. You paused and I jumped in.
She had a breathe.
I took a deep breath. That's exactly right.
How are you?
Oh, fine. How are you?
Terrific.
That's always good. Terrific is one of my favorites. I learned that from someone who said he lived in Chicago. He was Mr. McNally, and he said, "Terrific!" And you always knew that something horrible was coming. All right.
I hope that's not the case for...
No, not for you.
Oh, good.
Not for you. All right, Frank in the South Bronx. If you are under 45, you are probably going to think I'm a total crank for asking this, but here goes. Over the past...
I'm definitely not under 45, so I don't think that already.
Right, and I don't either. I felt loved because I felt targeted in this, you know, in a positive way. Over the past couple of years, I've noticed that if you're walking your dog past a puppy under 4 or 5 months, the owner will scoop the puppy up and tell you it can't interact with any dogs because it hasn't had all its shots yet. I don't recall this happening, say, 20 years ago. Now, I'm not saying it's not good to be careful, but since dogs are required to be vaccinated for all of the major canine communicable diseases, is it really such a health risk? And do you think anything is lost in terms of socialization when puppies aren't allowed contact with other dogs?
I do think that socialization is super, super important, and it's really important for the longevity of dogs because most dogs are turned into shelters because they have been poorly socialized and they have some sort of behavior problem. That being said, really, dogs are not required to have vaccination for major diseases. They are only required to have a rabies vaccine. So it's difficult to know what other dogs are, may be carrying. That being said, most people these days take better care of their dogs, but not everybody. And the world has become so small that dogs travel all over the place. So you have to have a balance between a modicum of caution so that your puppy... Typically, puppies get their final vaccination at about 4 months old, and so at about 4.5 months would be fully protected theoretically. And but not against everything. You know, there are canine respiratory disease complex, all kinds of viruses and bacteria and so forth that can cause respiratory disease that are potentially communicable. So there has to be some sort of a happy medium there. So the puppies, you know, finding a group that your dog can play with of young dogs or older dogs that you know the parents and you know that they've been vaccinated and you know that they haven't been carried all over the country, you can get my understanding is you can very easily get a piece of paper that says your dog is an emotional support dog and so many
so
people.
So easily. I mean, you can get an emotional support mouse if you are so inclined, and that's absolutely being abused at this juncture in my view. But what I'm curious about is how early can you start puppy class separately. This is a tangent, but I'm just wondering if you could just take a bunch of puppies at the age of 3 months or whatever and put them in
for socializing.
For
I think that
fun.
Some people do, and they're very careful to monitor whether they've been vaccinated at that point. And, you know, again, you have to be somewhat cautious, but, use good judgment as far as what they might potentially be exposed to.
Right.
I think that if puppies are in single family homes and people aren't traveling a lot with them and they're local, there's not anything going around, then you're playing it pretty safe as far as exposing them to other puppies and letting them socialize and play, going to puppy class, and they really, really enjoy that. And that's where they get the exposure to all kinds of different behaviors.
And I'm gonna be old here and tell Frank that something happened to me, I would say, gosh, you know, decades ago, when Frank was still a teenager, when a vet recommended that a puppy, you might even remember this, a puppy, a family puppy, couldn't come up to the country to my house with my other vaccinated dogs because of, quote, airborne viruses, unquote.
Oh, I see. You know,
and
yeah.
So it's just to say that, as with parenting and as seen on TV, you know, you, Dr. Cannon, are absolutely correct when you say there's got to be a balance between, you know, you cannot shelter something to such an extent that it doesn't have the opportunity to be socialized. And that said, don't be stupid.
Yeah, and I think that the veterinarians in the city see a lot more nasty things that dogs pick up because there's so many in such a small area that, you know, that they're potentially overly cautious. But certainly bringing the dog to the country is a better thing. You know, the air, more air, fewer dogs per square foot.
Right, and less of a chance. And in that particular case, you know, all of the relevant animals that the puppy was going to be exposed to were known to be safe. And that's,
right.
I think that's another layer of this question that we should probably talk about, because as we've discovered over time, you know, there are a lot of people who use vets and have practices in the city, and I mean, it's the finest care. I think that some people's regular health care isn't at the scale that these animals' veterinary care is. So, you know, there's as in life, there are great poles. You know, there are dogs that get absolutely nothing, and then there are dogs that get every single thing, and it's not even
right
clear that they need that every single thing.
Right. And so it is it's a judgment call. You know, if you have a little tiny puppy, I was on the street in New York, I would be somewhat careful about where I put my pup.
I was actually told when I started Dogs in the City is that you really don't want their feet touching the pavement until they're 4 months, you know, and until they've had their last set of shots.
Yeah.
And that totally made sense because, Lord knows. So, but
how do you socialize them if that's the case?
You bring people over. You have puppy classes.
Right.
You
controlled, more of a controlled environment.
Yeah, absolutely. But but you totally socialize them. And the best thing about living in the country with puppies is we got to skip the entire paper training step.
Right.
Just in turn, you know, which is huge, because if you can put a puppy outside from the jump to do what it needs to do, it's a heck of a lot easier than trying to first get it on a piece of paper and then trying to translate. For me,
right,
the paper is like, okay, great, now you can.
And going all the way.
Right.
Down the elevator and out.
Yeah. Now, yeah. On the other hand, because a lot of puppies are portable, and because there are parks and there are places where you can take dogs, etc., and this was before the time of dog parks where you do need to be vaccinated, etc. But you could always, you know, you'd scoop up your puppy. It wasn't that the puppy had to stay inside all the time. You scooped up your puppy and you put it under your arm and off you went to the place where there were other puppies or people or dogs to play with. You know, because that's what happens. Just in the same way, you have children, and suddenly you find other children for your children to play with.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how the socialization. It's like that bit's automatic. What I think Frank is talking about is more along the lines of the airborne virus thing that I heard about so many years ago, rather than
a
middle.
Yes, and so I can understand people seeing someone come along with a dog on a leash and not wanting them necessarily to sniff noses with their baby.
Oh yeah, and I have a whole other thing is when they're not puppies, and this is another argument for moving to the country if you are going to have bunches of dogs, is you just never know. Yeah, your dogs like people don't love everybody all the time. And my favorite statement on the planet is, oh, my dog is friendly, you know, as an excuse to sort of insert friendly dog into a pack of grumps. It just never ends well, especially on leash.
Exactly. I agree. So. They're much more defensive on leash.
Yep. So it's just that's just one of the things. If there were going to be education, that would be a good place to start.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Ty in Dover Plains. My cousin Amy has a big old female bearded dragon called Leonard. Me and Amy have been talking about her moving up from Florida and renting an apartment together up here. But I'm sort of worried about my cat, Beulah. She's an old girl, 15 and a half, and has some respiratory problems. Leonard is definitely not in her tank most of the time. She sleeps in my cousin's bed and hangs out in the living room a lot. Do reptiles pose a health risk to my kitty?
Reptiles, in general, the risk would be for a couple of bacterial infections like salmonella. You know, people have to be careful as well, so potentially transmissible to people who are either very young, very old, or immunocompromised. So that would be the same situation with the cat, because reptiles can carry salmonella, they can carry campylobacter, and even leptospirosis is my understanding. So, you know, if this bearded dragon has been already living with dogs and cats and everybody's been fine, I guess it wouldn't be too much of a problem. If your cat, though, has a chronic feline leukemia virus or a feline AIDS virus, the FIV, then probably not a good idea to live with a bearded dragon. You know, I don't know about the size. I think they can get 1 or 2 feet long. And so would a cat try to attack a lizard like that? Probably not a lizard that size. So just like everything else, you have to weigh the risks. If the bearded dragon has the run of the house, and so does the cat, then, you know, where is the
safe space?
Lizard passing stools, and potentially those stools might be infective to people and other cats. So those are all kinds of conversations that need to be had if there's a way in the house to separate them. And keep the dragon in one room. What happens now at the cousin's house with the lizard poop, et cetera, would be a conversation that I would have.
And
I know that people do have lizards and cats and dogs that live together, and everything works out fine. But it is somewhat of a risk, especially with an older cat.
So that was going to be my question. So the 15 and a half. The 15 and a half would be also something to keep in. It's like that's a fair amount of time to start saying, hey, your life is going to be changed with a lizard.
Right. Changed in a big way if it's a cat who isn't used to living with other pets. So that would be sort of the interaction would be just as important as the potential health risk.
Right. All right. Samantha in Waterbury. My chinchillas are recovering from ringworm, which they were diagnosed with last month. I used to let them out of their cage to play in the house. I have wall-to-wall carpet. Is the fungus of ringworm probably still in the carpet? And if so, what am I supposed to do about it? Also, once they've had ringworm, are they more likely to get it again, or are we done?
So I can't speak to ringworm in chinchillas. I can speak to ringworm in dogs and cats. I don't really know what species that the chinchillas get, although I would assume that they... I don't know. So are they getting it? I'm assuming that they're getting it from the colony. In dogs and cats, ringworm is a fungus, and most of it is caused by Microsporum canis in both dogs and cats, but there are a couple of other kinds that can be infective to dogs and cats and people. And these spores, fungal spores, live inside the hair follicles for a very long period of time, so ringworm can be difficult to get rid of. Typically, you know, dogs and cats are put on oral medication. I'm assuming the chinchillas would be as well. And getting rid of it in the environment can be a challenge. They keep on shedding those hairs, and with the hairs come the spores. So vacuuming is really important, and if you've got wall-to-wall carpet, you know, you've got to get all that hair out. So steam cleaning, I would probably steam clean every 2 weeks through the whole treatment period, which sometimes can be a couple of months, because those infective spores, if you don't do anything, then they can last in the carpet for up to 18 months, and so they can be reinfective. I think that certainly the case with domestic animals, oftentimes the dog with ringworm has either a, you know, some stressor where they, that's why they picked it up, or some skin problem that made this typical protective skin barriers not work well, or they've been exposed to kittens. So kittens coming from colonies of kittens coming from shelters tend to carry a lot of ringworm with them. And so it may be the same thing with the chinchilla, is that they're raising these little ones together in housing that's not so perfect. And so either they're stressed or they just have ringworm everywhere, and so that they're picking it up that way. So once the immune system is more mature, they should have more resistance to it, if that makes sense. However, they can become reinfected in your house with the wall-to-wall carpet. So it's much, much easier to clean a bare floor than it is. You know, you can vacuum and then mop, but the carpeting is difficult. So renting one of those steam cleaners and doing it during treatment, minimally, sometime during treatment, and then again once they've been cleared. So they have to be cleared by the veterinarian so that the hair can grow back and they can look perfectly fine and they might still have ringworm enough so that they can spread it. So it is a really difficult disease, and it's one that you've got to go to the veterinarian and do follow-up and make sure that they've been completely cleared by testing the hair. And once they have been, then, you know, you want to make sure that either you tear up the carpet and redo the, put down a hardwood floor, or you've got to do the cleaning, necessary. And that means, I'm sorry, couches and so forth. So keep those animals off of the furniture.
Right. You know, as daunting as this is, though, it's pretty clear, because you have to keep doing the vet and you have to keep doing the steam cleaning. So so it's really a yes. It's really a yes, you have to keep doing it. No, it's not over once they are clean. Then you have to keep cleaning, and, you know,
right.
It's a pain in your backside, but it's...
Yeah. I mean, typically with kittens, we say 3 negative cultures or 3 negative PCRs.
How long does that take?
Tests. Well, sometimes we'll end up treating them for 6 weeks and then continuing the, you know, if we get a negative test at 6 weeks of treatment, then test every 2 weeks. So then you're talking about another 6 weeks. So 3 months. 3-4 months of if you're lucky and they respond well.
That's a lot of work.
It is. And you have to be careful that you're not getting it as well.
All right, so we will say good luck, Samantha. And we move on to Ben in New Paltz. We have a 1-year-old intact male Great Pyrenees. Long story short, he's a sweetheart and handsome as can be, but let's just say he's also capable of clearing a room pretty darn fast. He just seems gassy all the livelong day. He's on Science Diet wet food. We tried kibble, but that wasn't better. Internet says the breed is prone to gas, but there's got to be a way to fix it, we hope.
Well, you know, the dogs produce gas because they're not digesting their food well. So, and they're growing bacteria that are gas producers, or help in the production of gas. So they're not, you know, the type of fiber that they're getting is not correct. The type of bacteria that is being aided by the type of fiber, et cetera, et cetera. So diet change is usually indicated. You can try some enzymes, digestive enzymes. There's a product called Prozyme that could be helpful that you can add to the food. I haven't found that. Usually that will reduce the amount of gas, but it doesn't make it go away. So oftentimes a diet change is needed. So there might be too much fiber in the food. There might be not enough fiber. There might be not enough soluble fiber for your particular dog. So, you know, playing with the diet, something maybe that's more easily digested, to try that for a month or so.
And how would you, is that worth talking to your vet? This is where the internet can be either very helpful or not so much. If you know what you're looking for, you would have a better chance of finding it. But for example, saying that, well, the breed is prone to gas doesn't even send you into the, hey, let's change the diet conversation.
Exactly. So, you know, the breed is prone to gas. I'm not really sure that that's the case, but that's been my experience, but it must be the experience of the owners. You know, the diet is all important here, but going ahead and trying some digestive enzymes is never contraindicated. Prozyme can be gotten over probably at Amazon,
right.
And you can sprinkle it on top of the food and try that. You want to try it for a couple of weeks to see if it's helping, and then consider a diet change to something that's more easily digested.
So if you
talk to your veterinarian about that. Science Diet has foods that are more easily digested. Royal Canin has usually they're called gastrointestinal diets, but they're a little bit easier to digest. You can talk to about a homemade diet, which is quite an undertaking for a Great Pyrenees because of the volume.
Right. But I just, like, in the Science Diet Department, would you ask a vet or would you look online at the various descriptions of the...
You need to have a conversation with your veterinarian because the... I don't think that you're going to be able to, unless you're just out there and you're just going to keep on switching foods and trying various foods, I'm not sure that their online information is going to be helpful.
All right. And last question. I think we've got another couple of minutes. Deb in Ida Grove, Iowa, podcast listener here. I've always wanted to have a sugar glider for a pet. And now that I've gotten a divorce from my pet-hating ex-husband, I'd like to go ahead and do it. But I live in a rural area, and I'm not sure if it's a bad idea to have a sort of exotic pet when most of the vets around here are pretty standard. What do you think?
This is exotic animal question day.
Isn't it? I didn't notice. We were doing fine with a cranky...
I've never treated a sugar glider. They're very cute. I wouldn't know how to treat them, and I do. And I am one of the few veterinarians in the area who will treat a rodent or a rabbit. So I think finding, you need to be prepared to bring your animal if it's sick to for whatever distance necessary to someone who treats exotic animals and who has some experience with the sugar glider. So they're marsupials, is my understanding. So they're more related to. They look like little rodents, but they.
Are they baby kangaroos?
They kind of look like flying squirrels, but that's why they're called gliders, I guess. But they are marsupials, so they're related to the kangaroo, yeah. And I don't believe they look like kangaroos, but they're in that class. So they're different than having a rodent. They're supposed to be pretty friendly, but...
Because you told me last week, I learned from you that if a mouse bites you, it's bad.
If what bites you?
A mouse.
Oh. Right. The sugar glider, though, is definitely an exotic pet. There's a lot to learn about them. They're social creatures. So I always worry about that with a super social creature having one. In other words, they live in colonies. And so having a single pet... You know, how do you bond to that pet and make them sort of part of the family? And if they are part of the family, then how do they behave? So you want to definitely do your research, and it's not a pet that your regular veterinarian is going to be able to treat. I think that was really the main question.
So I think you've actually answered the main question in a yes or no fashion, which is very, very good and was something that we appreciate very much. And so the close. This has been Pet Files Ask the Vet, underwritten by the Millerton Veterinary Practice, 518-789-3440, millertonvet.com. Thank you, Dr. Cannon.
And you can hear Pet Files here on Robinhood Radio, broadcast every Thursday, rebroadcast on the weekend as well, and online and on demand. Robinhoodradio.com. Click on demand. Click on Pet Files Ask the Vet.